morning. We're going to talk about something this morning that will frame several of our conversations throughout the year. And it's possible that for some of you, the concepts that we're going to talk about are a review. But I think, for the most part, there'll be some newness for all of us in the opening portion. And I hope significant newness for all of us towards the end. But we're going to set a stage for something that I think is extremely important to understand as a Jewish person in this world. And we'll begin with a story that's totally unrelated to Rosh Hashanah. You'll be surprised, I think, that we're talking about this at all at this time of year. But you know the story of the Meraglim, of the spies who go to Eretz Yisrael, and they are sent by Moshe to spy out the land, and they come back with a negative report. And there's mass national hysteria as a result of their report. And the Pasuk says that they all cried on that night. The exact language of the Pasuk is, "Batisa kol ha'eda va'idnu es kolam va'yivku ha'am ba'layla ha'hu." And they all rose up and gave voice, and the nation cried on that night. What does that mean, they cried on that night? Ba'layla ha'hu. So there's a famous explanation of this, whose source really, there may be an earlier source, I think it may be a Medrash, but the source is quoted in Rashi and Tehillim. Rashi and Tehillim, to Perek Kuf Vav, chapter 106, Pasuk Chaf Zion, Pasuk 27, says the following. The verse says, "Ulahapil Zaram Bagoyim," that the Jewish people had caused their children to go out among the nations. And Rashi says this, "Me'oso sha'a," from that moment, "nigzar aleihem churban habayis." It was at that moment that there had been a decree of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, the destruction of the temple in Jerusalem. "Sha'arei leil tes ba'av bachu," for it was on the 9th of Av that they cried. "V'amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu," and the Holy One, blessed be He, said, "Heim bachu b'chiyah shel chinam, v'ani ekva lahem b'chiyah l'doros." They cried an unwarranted cry, and I will establish for them crying for the generations. What this tells us is that the source of Tisha B'Av that we celebrate or we commemorate, we deal with in the summer, where we mourn the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash and the second Beis HaMikdash and all of the calamities that happened to the Jewish people throughout history, the source of it is found in the story of the spies. That they should not, the nation should not have cried that night. For the spies came back and they could have said good news, which is, yes, it's a wonderful land. And yes, there's some challenges, but Hashem told us He's going to take us there, and He's going to save us, and He's going to show us the way, and we know Hashem. He's the one who just did all those miracles in Mitzrayim and Egypt, and He's the one who just gave us the Torah. We can trust in Hashem. They didn't say that. They said, it's a great land, it's a tough land, and we cannot overcome our enemies. And they caused everyone to cry. And so everyone cried, the whole nation. And Hashem said, This used to be something that fathers used to say to their kids. Fathers used to say to their kids, I hope nobody says it now. I say, you're crying? I'll give you a reason to cry. Right? And what are you crying for? There's nothing to cry about here. But they did cry. And so although the event of the Meraglim of the spies were some 900 years before the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash of the temple, its roots are there. And this is one example, and we're going to talk about a few other examples, of the concept that Jewish holidays are not like the holidays that we celebrate in the secular community, in the secular world. There's a wonderful holiday in America, in May. It's got an interesting calculation. It's on the first Sunday in May that follows a Saturday, I think. I think that's the calculation for Mother's Day. It can't be on May 1st, but it can be on almost any other day after that. Something like that. why is Mother's Day in May? Is it because something like real is happening that in May you should celebrate your mother more than some other time? Does anybody know why Mother's Day is in May? The answer is because Hallmark, the card company, made up Mother's Day. They made it up to make more money. I'm not knocking it. By the way, I celebrate Mother's Day in a very serious way. And I happen to believe that if your mother cares about Mother's Day, then it's a mitzvah from the Torah to honor that day. Because you have to do anything that your mother makes your mother happy. But the reason Mother's Day is in May is because they figured it to be the best time of the year in between sort of, you know, after other holidays when there was a lull in the calendar to make it then. It will sell the most cards. But really, there's nothing about May that makes more sense to honor your mother. And if they wanted to move it someplace else, they would. No problem. For example, Thanksgiving. Anybody know why Thanksgiving is in November? The events of Thanksgiving happened in October. And it once was in October. It was moved by a legislation of Congress to the end of November in order to create a holiday season to focus on from the end of November until the end of December. That's not that moving. That's like not that spiritual, right? It's just, they just moved it. It was during Lincoln's presidency they moved it. So the point is, and if they want to move it to someplace else, no problem. It doesn't, it got nothing to do with that time. However, Jewish holidays, and this is the main thing that I want to drive home, because we're going to come back to this several times during the year. Jewish holidays are not a commemoration of something that once happened. And when we decide to evoke that commemoration, we get into it. And if we want to move it, we'll move it. And even if we can't move it because it happened once in a while, this is the right time to commemorate. It's got nothing to do with commemoration. Jewish holidays are reliving a certain time that comes back every year. In the work Michtav Me'Eliyahu by Rabbi Eliyahu Dessler, who lived about 50 years ago, great rabbi in England and then in Israel, he writes about how his own teacher taught him this principle, that time revolves back around itself. It's not linear. It doesn't move where you say this was once upon a time and now we just keep moving over this way. No. Time keeps returning. And he says every Shavuos is the same Shavuos. We know, for example, that we don't sit there and commemorate once upon a time we got the Torah, so let's celebrate that. We once again deal with what it means to get the Torah on Shavuos. Because this time of year is once again that proper time to deal with a certain element. This is the principle of how Jews look at time. It's a very important idea. That we don't commemorate what once happened, we revisit the reality of a certain time that comes back. Now, let's talk about this in a scientific sense. Can anybody describe for me the difference in most of the Northern Hemisphere between June and December? Go ahead, Raina.
I'm not sure. In June it's winter, and in December it's summer.
I'm sorry, Northern Hemisphere, where we live.
Oh, so it's opposite? Oh, so where we live.
Yes.
In June it's summer, yes. And in December it's winter.
In June it's the summer. What does summer mean?
It's hot.
It's hotter in June than December?
Yeah.
Every year?
Usually. In Northern, I don't know, I'm not sure.
I'm asking you, come on.
Yeah, I think
you
so.
You know, you do know.
Yeah,
owner.
I know.
Okay, what do you know about June?
That it is hot.
Okay, what do you know about December? Okay, is every June hotter than every December?
Not in different places of the earth.
I'm not talking about different places. Northern Hemisphere, Phoenix, Arizona, 85254, your zip code. Okay? What, is it hotter every June than it is every December?
Yes.
Okay, can anybody tell me anything else about June versus December besides how hot it is? Rachel?
There's usually no rain in June.
There's no rain, and in December we do get rain. Very good. Something that's not, does not have to do with weather. Go ahead.
In June, the sun goes down later.
Very good. In June, the sun goes down later. Excellent. Go ahead.
Some parts of June, we're not in school.
Okay, that could change though, right? That's the circumstantial, right? I promise, I'll try to make sure that doesn't change, okay? But it could change, right? But the other things that are immutable laws about June. By the way, there's one other thing, besides the fact that the sun goes down later.
It comes up earlier.
Every June, the day is longer than every December. There's no way to violate that. Even if if the same thing with the weather, on average, you might have an aberrant day in one or the other, but on average, you'll never have a hotter December than June. These are realities of the physical world. Realities. So that if you would wake up and you would not know what month you're in, God forbid somebody comes out of a coma. It's no idea. What time it is, when it is, what year, what date, nothing. You have no idea. How long would it take you to figure out approximately what month it is? Yeah, not long at all. I mean, if you have some sense of how these things work, basically instant. You look at your watch, even if it's misset, 16 hours the sun was up, you know that it's the summer. No question about it. You could narrow it down. You figure it out. In fact, the more information you had, you could actually identify the date itself. Because maybe you didn't know this. Did you know that the sunrise and sunset times are the same for every date of the year, every year? It's like whatever the sunrise is on September 10th, it was the same last year and it will be the same next year. That's why we have leap years, actually, to correct for that, to keep things consistent. That's why they add one day every 4 years, except once every 100 years, they don't add that date, except in once every 400 years when they do add that date. That's in order to keep things consistent. That's called the Gregorian calendar. It was a change when the Pope Gregor changed the calendar from the Julian calendar to the Gregorian calendar to account for all of this stuff. So you could look at it and you know right away there's physical realities of the dates. Everybody knows that. Yeah, that's clear. So that, like, for example, my birthday is in the summer. If I have a birthday party at 5 a.m. on my birthday, every single year, the sun will already be up. No question about it. Now, anybody, any farmers here? No farmers?
I grow some stuff.
Okay. But no real experienced farmers, botanists, horticulturalists, nobody here. But if you were a farmer, you would know when the right time of year is to plant a certain type of thing. For example, there's something called winter wheat and there's something called spring wheat. I don't know anything about it. I just know the names. And the names, they're pretty simple to understand what they are. Yeah? Spring wheat you plant in the spring, winter wheat you plant in the winter. That particular product there is a certain perfect time of the year to plant that. And a certain perfect time of the year to harvest it. And that's been discovered at some time. Right? Like, you do grow some things. So when do you grow them?
Usually we grow early.
You grow them in the winter. Why don't you grow them in the summer? They die. Now, until you... This is a crucial point, friends. Because I hope you're going to see something really blow you away kind of idea. There was a time that you didn't know that. There was a time perhaps that mankind didn't yet know that. They didn't know what's the right time to plant herbs. Maybe here in Phoenix it's fairly obvious. But in Nebraska where they grow the corn, I'm sure they have perfected when to grow the corn. And there was a time they didn't know it. And then someone came up with the idea that this is the right time. Listen closely, friends. If let's say, just by imagination, we say the first week of March is the right time to plant corn. Just for instance. And let's say that somebody really understood that for the first time in 1970. They finally got to the realization the first week in March is always the right time to plant the corn. Was that true in 1950 before they ever discovered it? Or would we say, no, before 1970 that wasn't true. It's only since 1970 that that was true. What do you think? Who thinks that that was true even before 1970? Who thinks that it wasn't true before 1970? We could ask two more questions. Who doesn't care? And as my teacher for modern Jewish history in my senior year in high school said, just by a show of hands, is anybody interested? Okay, but anyway. So now, good. For some of us, realize that there's no way that that was not true before. It's just that's when you discover it. That's when we saw for the first time the truth of it. But it was always a truism that corn should be planted in that time of year. When it comes to Jewish holidays and the spiritual realm, friends, every season and every time has its reality. Just like we said, every June means something in a physical sense. Every December means something in a physical sense. Every Jewish month, and in fact, every Jewish date means something in a deep and profound spiritual sense. For example, it's not just on Purim that we commemorate that once upon a time, Hashem saved the Jewish people through the events of the Megillah. It's every year on Purim that we deal with the fact and we work on ourselves to see the hidden hand of God in how he runs his world. That he doesn't only run his world through miracles like a split sea and through turning water into blood, but he runs his world through what other people might call coincidence. We call that hashgacha. We call it the providence of God. That there is such a thing as Hashem behester panim. That God runs his world when you don't see him evidently. In a transcendent kind of a way. And when we come back to Purim, we work on that. We work the soil, the spiritual soil of Adar, to reap from that spiritual soil the spiritual reality that God runs our lives and cares about us even when we don't see him every day. That's the notion of how we view time. That there can be crying that 900 years later is manifest in the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Because on that night you made this the night for crying. That there can be an event that happened, for example, like the events of the giving of the Torah over 3,000 years ago, but that time of year at the beginning of Sivan is the time that we can work on receiving the Torah, accepting the Torah into our hearts. That there can be events of Pesach that happened 3,300 years ago, but on that time of year, we deal with and we work on, because this is the fertile soil. You see, this is the important way. There was an amazing event that happened at each one of these times, but that event only teaches us the nature of that time. We don't commemorate that event. We realize from that event what's going on now, what season it is. What spiritual season it is. So that when we see that Hashem took Klal Yisrael out of Mitzrayim and we could access freedom, we also work on accessing freedom this time of year. Now remember the thing we made about 1970. We said, look, when you discover the nature of a time, it's not that now that's the nature of the time. It was always the nature of time. You just didn't know it yet. So I want to read you a Rashi. Okay, this story goes back 3,700 years ago. You know this story? We'll be reading it in the Torah in about a month and a half. You know this story? It says that after the three angels went to see Avraham, after that, two of them went on to Sodom to see Lot, Avraham's nephew. It's in Parshas Vayera. And this is what it says. Vayomer. And Lot said to him, Hine na Adonai suru na el beis avdechem. Come on, my masters. Turn towards the house of your servant. Velinu v'rachatsu raglechem. Lay down and wash your feet. Vishkamtem. And then you'll get up. V'halachtem v'adarkechem. And you'll go on your way. Vayomaru, and they said to him, Lo, no, we're not coming in. Ki v'rachov nalin, we'll stay in the street. V'yiftzar bam me'od. He got really pushy with them. And then now they turned towards his house to come to him. And they came into his house. Listen to these words. Vayas lohem mishteh. He made a party for them. Umatzos afa vayochelu. And he baked matzos and they ate. So what's the obvious question? Why matzah? I mean, it's not the world's most delicious candy. Here, guys, come on in. Here's some matzah. I've been begging you to come into my house. We're having a major event. Here's matzah. Doesn't make sense.
Maybe that was all they could afford.
It's possible. The question's an important one, and so we have to search for an answer. That's possible. But I would argue that if that were true, skip it. Well, there's a million things that are going on there. Unless there's a lesson to be learned about that it was matzah that they could afford. We have to know why do we care that there was matzah? Listen to these words of Rashi. Okay, listen to Rashi. Two words. Rashi quotes the verse, Umatzos afa, and he baked matzos, and then says the following two words, quoting the Medrash. Pesach Hayah. It was Pesach.
The same thing happened with Abraham.
Go ahead. Okay, right. This is the same time, right? So, what does that mean? It was Pesach. Come on, friends. Do you understand that we can calculate exactly when Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim? When it is that we rushed out and we couldn't allow our bread to rise. And therefore we eat matzah to, what Paimon might say, to commemorate what once happened. Isn't it irrational to say that exactly 401 years before Yetzias Mitzrayim, because that's when this event happened, because we know that the Exodus happened 400 years after Yitzchak was born, and Yitzchak was born the next year, because they just came and said, you're going to have a son named Yitzchak. So this is 401 years before the events of rushing out, and you won't have anything to eat, so you better take the dough you have and bake it into matzahs. Because you left in a rush. Why was Lot baking matzahs? Pesach haya? It was Pesach? It's not Pesach until it's Pesach. This is four centuries before Pesach happened. But once you understand that the events of Pesach are just the manifestation, they're just the ultimate example of what this season is about. Once you understand that this season was about accessing freedom even before we access national freedom, and it's still about accessing freedom, we're coming back to the same time of year, a spiritual reality that Nisan is about this notion. Once you understand that, then it could be that if you were a super person, like you were a prophet or you were the nephew of a prophet, you had access to the early inside information, you could make an early discovery even 400 years before the event that shows what this is all about happened. You could know. This is freedom season. That's the level Lot was on. The nephew of Avram, he knew this is freedom season. This is instant change season. Because matzah, after all, reminds us that Hashem has the power to do things in an instant. Change everything from slavery of hundreds of years to freedom. You could know about that instant even before the big event that demonstrated it happened, if you had the inside information. Because that was always true. It was true from when Hashem created the world, that the 15th of Nisan was the time for freedom. It may not have manifest itself until the year 2448, but it's not from 2448 and on that you see it. It was always true. The rest of us didn't know about it. So this is the concept of what's going on. It's the same Pesach 400 years before, and it's the same Pesach 3,000 years after. It's freedom time. It's the same Purim, it's the same Shavuos. By the way, it's even the same average day. If only you would know. I don't know. I don't know what the nature of the 19th of Shabbat is. But if you would know, there is something going on there. There's a spiritual reality to it. Just as there are physical realities of seasons that we have not yet discovered, although we've discovered a lot of them. There are physical realities of the Gregorian English date, and there are spiritual realities of the Jewish date. That's what we're doing when we come in contact with a yontif. So let's talk about that this time of year right now. What's going on, Rosh Hashanah? So it's an interesting day we find ourselves, and I didn't even think about this, but if I'm calculating correctly, we're 2 days away from the creation of the world. It says in the Machzor about Rosh Hashanah, Hayom Haras Olam. Today the world was created. But that's not really true. I'm sure this you know, many of you know, that Rosh Hashanah is not the anniversary of day one of creation. Rosh Hashanah is the anniversary of day six of creation. It's the anniversary of when creation came to its reason for being. Do you know why there are fish and all the animals and wind and flowers and gravity? There's only one reason for all those things and everything else that's in creation: to serve man, so that man can serve God. That's it. The reason why mankind was created last is because that's the way it goes when you're going to host somebody. When you're going to host somebody, you prepare the room before they arrive. Hashem created this world for your use. And you're magnificent. Every one of you. Every one of us. And by the way, the Gemara says that every person should say, Bishvili Nivra Ha'olam. Just for me, the world was created. It would have been worth it to Hashem to create a whole world for you. You understand? For you. For you. You look the person you see in the mirror. It was worth it to create the whole world. Because you are magnificent, you humankind. Because you're the first creation that can make any kind of decisions. A rock will be a rock. Wind will do the bidding of God. A lion will be a lion. It will chase after the thing that it's hungry for. At the moment that it's hungry, it will not look at the calendar and say, I think today is a fast day. I'm supposed to be cleaving to my creator. Today's not a day for me to chase the antelope. Can't do it. He does not have the battle of the Yetzer Hara and the Yetzer Tov, of the evil inclination and the good inclination. He doesn't have that battle. All of the creations do as they are robotically programmed to do, except for us. Every man and every woman has the ability to make free decisions, to choose between chasing after and running after our temptations or living for higher purposes. In fact, it goes so far as we can all decide whether we believe that God created the world and He is our master, or to say, I am the master, thank you very much. Look at me anyway. I know how to make the iPod. Can you believe, I mean seriously, it must be a very big challenge for whoever made the 747 that takes 450 people into the air in a big piece of metal that weighs tens of thousands of pounds. For that person, it must be a very difficult test to not believe that He created the world. The ability of mankind is beyond. Are you kidding me? 400 people can get into that metal box and you can lift it out of the off the ground and fly over the sea? It's magnetic, unbelievable. So man has to remind himself, and by the way, this is a talk for another time, but that's the essence of Shabbos. To remind ourselves that we didn't create the world. But we come back at this time of year, after the world has been created, and we come back, and now it's a checkup. That's a birthday. A birthday, by the way, is all twisted in this society. A birthday today in this society is day to celebrate you. Why? What have you done for anybody? It should be the day that you celebrate the others who've done for you. And I've told this maybe here before, but I've said this many times. I try to be very careful about this. When my birthday is coming, I send my mother a card and my wife a card. Why should they send me cards? I am coming back to a day where I say, what's going on? I have to be appreciative. Well, when you come to the birthday of life, Hashem takes on the world and He says, I put you into this world to take me on as your master, to make a decision. Let's see how you're making that decision. Everything else can't even make a decision. But you are here because you have the ability to reject me as the king. When you don't, when you take me on as your king, and you follow what I say, then you are living up. You're the greatest thing in the whole world. If the angels will take me on as their king, so what? They have no physical temptations. If the animals will reject me and they'll just follow their temptations, so what? They have no good inclination. But man was created in that perfect balance to choose to crown God over him. And that's the theme of Rosh Hashanah. That we stand in front of the shul, in the shul, stand in front of Hashem, and we say verses, psukim, of Malchuyos, where we crown Hashem over us. That's what the theme of the davening is constantly. You are the king. Because we come back to that time of year when Adam HaRishon first saw that, man, that Hashem was the king. And Hashem comes back to this world and he judges it, as it were, to see what's going on with you. Are you doing what you're supposed to do? Are you living up to that royal status of being the one close to me that can crown me? And our answer is yes. We crown Hashem. We accept upon ourselves the sovereignty of God. And that's the essential theme of Rosh Hashanah. It's the lead-in that awakens us to therefore mend our ways and think, if you're my king, I should do what you tell me. By the way, you're the instruction writer. You know what's best for me. And that's the theme of the 10 days. Seres Tumei Tshuva leads into Yom Kippur, where we really apologize for what we've made of this, the mess we've made of this whole thing. And that leads us, again, a much longer conversation for another time, but it leads us to the Sukkah, where we can then, having been cleansed, celebrate more fully with Hashem, eating and drinking and partying and enjoying. That's the type of, if we can work through Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur and take the Yom Kippur Jew into the Sukkah, it's the highest of the high. We'll have to explore that more at a different time. But it starts here with Rosh Hashanah. And it really starts now. It starts now in the days of Slichos, the days that we're already checking ourselves. It's a very interesting statement. The Pasuk says in Parshas Pinchas about all the offerings, all the korbanos that we give for the Yom Tovim. On every one of them is the same verb. The verb is v'hikravtem. V'hikravtem means, and you shall bring close. You should offer. V'hikravtem ola, you shall offer such and such a sacrifice, an offering on Shavuos, on Pesach, on Rosh Chodesh, on Shabbos. Onward. When it comes to Rosh Hashanah, there's a different word. When it comes to Rosh Hashanah, it says, va'asisem ola, and you shall make an offering. And the Mishnah Berurah tells us, written by the Chafetz Chaim, he tells us the reason for this. He says, the reason that it says, Va'asisem ola, and you shall make a burnt offering, if v'lamed sheber Rosh Hashanah ya'asa adam atzmo ki'ibu makrivis atzmo. To teach you that on Rosh Hashanah, a person should make himself. As though he's offering what? Not the animals. That he's offering himself. Make yourself. Va'asisem ola. Make yourself into dedication to God. And therefore, there have to be days of slichos because there's a minimum of 4 days that we check an animal that's going to be offered on the Mizbeach. We check it for mumin, for problems, for deficiencies. And if it has deficiencies, it can't be offered. So the days of slichos are the days that we check ourselves for those same deficiencies. And we work on ourselves to see what's going on with me. Can I really say that I belong on the Mizbeach? An offering to Hashem, am I ready for that? But the opportunity knocks. Of the closest to Hashem, like the verse says in Yeshaya, Dirshu Hashem behimotzo, call out to God, seek God when he's close. Kiru b'yoso karov, call him when he's close to you. This refers, the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah said, this refers to the days of between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Hashem is coming to this world, as it were, to see what's going on with us. And every single person here has a lot to be proud of. And from the strength of that, which you have to be proud of how you do overcome temptations and how you do make the best of your lives, and how you do hold back from speaking Lashon Hara, and you do hold back from judging other people, and you do hold back from flaunting what you have, and what, and how you look, and you do study, and you do put disdain other things that are a waste of your life. From that strength, we can push ourselves to be even better. So that when Rosh Hashanah comes, and it's not just a commemoration of what once was, but it's real about what's going on right now, judgment and closeness, when Rosh Hashanah comes from that strength of how great you are, you can build on yourselves to perfect whatever deficiencies there may be in our behaviors and in our thoughts, to offer ourselves to Hashem on this holy day and these holy days that are coming. Okay. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.